So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribe. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. The United States recently signed major new international trade pacts with Canada and Mexico. That was one deal. And with China. What are the potentials for how those new international trade pacts will affect Wisconsin exports? So I've asked three people familiar with this issue to join me. To my left is Dave Daniels, a Kenosha County dairy farmer, vice president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. To his left is former Governor Scott McCallum, who led an international nonprofit after leaving office in 2003 and still works on an international trade. And Ian Coxhead is an applied economics professor, UW-Madison. Gentlemen, thanks very much. Let's ask the 10,000-foot question. New trade deals, Mexico, Canada, China. Are we in for a major shift? Good news, bad news, short answer. Dave, you want to go first?
Sure. We had a little bit of a shortfall here in 2019 from 2018, but I think 2020 is going to be advantageous because of the trade deals that are coming to fruition, and that should be great.
You're bullish.
I am bullish, yes.
Scott?
I look at it when you ask good news or bad news. We took three steps back, and we now have taken one step forward. And it's important to take that step forward. Hopefully, it creates momentum for further agreements. It's important, though, to have further agreements when we look at what's happening
globally. We took three steps back?
I think with the series of tariffs that we have set up, not only from the perspective of the state of Wisconsin, from the perspective of the United States and globally, we tend to look at it as a zero sum, but the fact is everybody is coming out behind when we don't have free trade.
Professor?
Agree with Governor McCallum. Three steps back, one step forward. You ask if we're in a new era. I'd say we are in a new era of instability and uncertainty based on walking away from established trade institutions, dispute resolution procedures, and understandings.
Well, thanks very much. Let's walk through the international trade issue from a series of numbers, both from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. So let's give an overview. First graphic, Wisconsin firms exported $21.7 billion worth of products to 202 countries and customs and territories around the world in 2019. Now, we can all jump in here as we go through this graphic. Was this a setback from like 2018 because of the tariffs? Just any impressions, gentlemen?
I guess I talked about that. It was a little bit of a step back, and our two gentlemen here to the left also said that. But I think as we get those trade deals in place and 2020 comes along, it's a global industry, or a global market, and that's the tough part. There's always some little things that may happen within that sector, but I think it's a positive that we're going and moving in the right direction.
Okay. Any other PSs on that stat?
Just one is we look specifically at agriculture. There are long-range trends that are occurring, first of all, that we need to keep in mind that may not be just dependent upon trade and tariffs. Secondly, when we look at the state of Wisconsin and where it's going, we're moving forward when there's a business community can understand what we are doing. So you're able to do trade and decide what you're going to grow and what the prices are going to be if there's a marketplace that has some stability to it. And that's what we're trying to drive towards now is a stability to the marketplace.
Does that mean, Professor, that the new deals with Mexico, Canada, and China at least – everybody knows what the rules are on international trade, even though they may not be as advantageous to the U.S. as some say?
With regard to the China deal, it means absolutely the opposite.
Opposite,
we don't
you.
Have any rules with China anymore. We used to work with China through the WTO and had a set of rules that everyone understood and tried to abide by. Now we have a bilateral trade agreement, which either party can tear up at really relatively short notice. And it's an agreement which I have to say is also based on completely unrealistic expectations about outcomes.
Well, thank you. You mentioned China. Our second graphic goes to that. 46.3% of Wisconsin exports went to Canada and Mexico. And then we'll get to the next graphic in China. In Wisconsin, number three export destination and number one import source. So can we kind of talk about those two graphics? What do we give Canada? What do we give Mexico? And the interaction with China? Anybody?
And on the farming, on the ag dairy side, we've got a lot of dairy products that go to Mexico. They're our number one importer of dairy products, and then also Canada. On the Chinese side, we have ginseng in the central part of Wisconsin.
We're number one exporter of ginseng.
And that's a very good market for those farmers up in that area.
Well, as long as the weather's good, because that's right. That's so.
Well, the weather is only one factor. And I was in Warsaw last summer with the ginseng growers, with the Xu family and others. They are coming to grips with the realization that they are kind of collateral damage from the trade war with China. So the Chinese tariff on ginseng exported from the U.S., primarily from Wisconsin, used to be 8%, but under the trade war terms, it's 38%. So that's a huge hit to their biggest export market.
Right. And I was going to say, as lieutenant governor, every year I would travel to the Asian market, mostly China and Hong Kong and Taiwan, on behalf of the Wisconsin ginseng growers. And we're trying to open the market at the time, which is it's a different type of market. Was closed. We were able to get it open. And that's one of the things you may want to touch on a little bit later, is on the agreements, what it does to specifically in deciding who winners and losers are in the marketplace.
Well, in the case of ginseng, it'll be the Canadian ginseng growers. I mean, they'll be laughing all the way to the bank because they don't face the same tariff.
That's right. Well, maybe we can get into winners and losers now. He just said there's one loser. Any other examples, Governor?
Yes, the agreement overall with the Chinese in this time around, I'm a free market person, and I think Americans and Wisconsin farmers can compete with anybody in the world given a level playing field. Mm-hmm. But what we have done is an approach, I don't want to use the word socialism now, but when you have government dictating which purchases of specific products are going to be made, that's no longer a free marketplace. That's government deciding who winners and losers are going to be. So philosophically, on the trades, as we're moving away from an international agreement where the rules are easy to understand, towards a system where any party can say we're winning or losing, and in this case, a specific party, the U.S. is saying, here are specifically the products we want you to purchase. It's not a marketplace-based system, it's government dictating it.
But Dave, the problems with Canada and dairy exports, have those been cleared up? Because you and I remember, Wisconsin and I did news stories on the shutting down of some Canadian markets. Have those problems been largely resolved?
Well, when they did the USMCA, they did put in new phytosanitary and sanitary rules.
What does that mean?
Part of that is bringing on new technology that dairy processors have been able to use to get different products out of the 100 weight of milk. Okay. So Canada put in a class 7 class so that they could benefit their farmers. That's going to slowly go away. It's not going to go away tomorrow, right away, but it's going to be an opportunity for Wisconsin processors and also U.S. processors to market some other products into Canada.
So Wisconsin dairy farmers, dairy producers like you are getting a better deal from Canada than when they shut down, when they closed down some of the markets.
In time we will, yes.
In time we will. Mm-hmm.
And that was a good case when you get into the specifics where there were other barriers being set up that would not allow Americans to compete with Canada. And so if we're going to an open marketplace, we're going to be able to compete in much better ground. So that's a good step for us.
You want to elaborate on that, Ian?
Well, Wisconsin dairy farmers are very productive and very successful, and Canada is their biggest market. It's a good thing for them to the extent that they've managed to pry that door open just a little. Of course, the bigger picture is that the U.S. is retreating from trade with the rest of the world and leaving the field open to producers from other dairy-producing countries, such as my former country, New Zealand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're gaining on the Canadian front. That's great. We're losing elsewhere.
That's right.
Okay, let's go back to the next graphic, from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp. Export destinations. We've talked about Canada. We've talked about Mexico. China, United Kingdom, Germany, and all others. Do you think there'll be some major shift in these numbers as a result of these new trade deals? Or thoughts?
Well, China right now is our third we're number three in exports from Wisconsin, number one of imports. When you say, are there going to be changes? Absolutely, there are going to be changes, because as you start to set barriers on American products, you've got New Zealand, you've got Australia, the meat markets in Latin America. Mm-hmm. You're going to see a major shift in what is happening. That isn't going to help the U.S.
It is not going to help the U.S.
It will not help the U.S.
It may help
Brazil. It may help New Zealand.
Undoubtedly it will.
Yeah. Because they won't have the same pricing of products coming into China. So you need to be very careful, and that's why I say we can compete in an open marketplace. We can't when we start having prices dictated, artificial barriers set up, and those are the things that we need to be concerned about. And personally, I think those are the things that we ought to be negotiating, is getting towards and more an open marketplace as opposed to specifically what is happening to each product.
I want to come back to something you said, the China deal. What should Wisconsin residents understand about that China deal? That the president held it up as something good, but your questions are, and the other side is?
The most important thing to realize about the Phase 1 deal with China is that it doesn't change very much, and it doesn't address any of the fundamental disputes that gave rise to the trade dispute in the first place. So in terms of the fundamental disagreements, those are things like China's subsidies for its firms, its protection of state-owned sector, its lack of respect for intellectual property rights. None of that is addressed in the tariffs applied by the Trump administration.
I thought they took a vow that they were going to stop stealing our high-tech secrets.
They may have done so.
excuse me.
They may have done so.
This is your area of expertise. Go ahead.
So none of those aspects of the trade relationship were addressed in the initial round of tariffs.
Okay.
And none were addressed in the Phase 1 deal just signed. That's the first thing. Second thing is that the average tariff applied by the U.S. on Chinese goods and by China on U.S. goods has barely budged from 2018 to the implementation of the new tariff agreement.
Despite all this huffing and puffing on tariffs?
All the huffing and puffing says the following, that the number of covered products and the value of covered products covered by tariffs, has been reduced by both sides, but the effect of that is relatively small on total trade. And the average tariff charged by China on U.S. products remains at just a shade above 20%, which is about five times higher than it was in 2017. The average tariff charged by the U.S. on Chinese imports remains at about 19%, which is six times higher than it was in 2017. So the effect of the Phase 1 trade agreement is almost no change, except reduced stability, because now we don't have an international dispute resolution mechanism to back up any disagreements.
Phase 1 trade deal with China, not a positive for Wisconsin exporters then? Not a net positive?
No, as Governor McCallum said a few minutes ago, it's like one step forward after taking three steps backwards. You know, our ag exports to China fell by 25% to 30% in the last 2 years, each year. Yep. That's because of tariffs. Right, that's because of China saying we don't want to buy U.S. soybean anymore, among other things. So that's not going to come back.
But now, didn't, as part of the China trade deal, didn't they promise to buy X billion worth of?
They did. They promised to buy $200
billion. Okay, I'm showing my ignorance. Correct.
Well,
correct.
I'd wanted to say some positive things first about the administration and the steps. First of all, it does show movement. That we're trying to come to an agreement. And that gives hope for the business community and for many of us that there's at least a goal of getting towards more free trade, having it closer. So that is a good step. The other is there has been large concern among many on the renminbi, the artificially devaluing their currency, which
this
makes
is
it
how
easier
China to, manipulates
right. But
its
we
currency.
Need to understand, negotiation, we're dealing from two different economic systems. And it's really kind of difficult to ask somebody to change an economic system to match the other person's. So that's why these. So there was an agreement. The Chinese have agreed to allow the market to set the renminbi, so it will not be artificially lowered. Intellectual capital was discussed. It's actually to the Chinese advantage to have property right and intellectual rights,
of course, yeah.
Now too. So they are starting to go in the direction we would have liked to have seen them do for a number of years ago, but it's to their advantage because if they're going to be innovative, they need to also have protections themselves. So overall, there were some good things that did occur. Negatively, as we say, what does it really do? The tariffs, it prevented new tariffs from going in place. We still have the other ones in place. And the things that need to be resolved, well, first of all, they're never going to purchase as much. And it's up to the U.S. to decide whether they've purchased enough or not. So there's no real – we used to have the World Trade Organization that was the arbitrator for these that you could go to see who's cheating and who isn't.
Yes.
But now each country can say, well, we don't think they're being fair. And that's the end of it. So it's not really a rule of – it's not a basis of rules of which you're operating. It's more on a whim.
Okay. Before we get to the next graphic, implications of the coronavirus for our Wisconsin trade exports, is it potentially major, do you think?
You know, I'm not a medical person, but what I've heard is that everybody is just wondering how far is it going to go.
Right.
Are they going to be able to contain it within China? And we know that it's in the Korea and Japan. We have it in the U.S. So can it be contained? That is the big question mark. I'm sure warmer weather might help that, but in turn, we just have to wait and see on that type of a process.
But the New York Times and other stories are reporting that China's manufacturing has been crippled and is just limping back to where it was because of the coronavirus. So the long range are there long range implications for Wisconsin trade exports?
The question was, can this affect it? It absolutely can. It's already changed supply chains. Anytime you shut down a major manufacturing area, as they have in China, completely close it down, they've just extended the quarantine for another couple of weeks. You can't run an economy with nobody going into work.
No.
So yes, it will affect it. The severity is yet to be determined. We should recognize, by the way, with this virus, it's only about it's about a 2% fatality rate, and we probably have as much of that with the common flu in the U.S.
Are,
but
it's 20, the con- 20 times higher than the, flu, the mortality rate for flu.
Okay, yeah, it's the contagion. It's the contagion.
Contagion is
very high.
Worried about
that's
being
part
a pandemic, which has worldwide.
And when you say worldwide implications, we've already seen it dramatically. Tourism is a huge industry globally. I suspect you're going to be able to see prices dropping on cruises right now. All of these things are occurring.
The number of virus on that one cruise ship. But
yes.
Okay, let's move on. The next graphic, Dave, this is your area of expertise. I was only able to get 2018 numbers for the top ag exports, and they show dairy and cattle and corn, soybeans, et cetera. And we're showing our viewers those numbers. Do you anticipate major changes now that we've got the Canada and Mexico deal?
Well, I think the Canadian and Mexico deal is a template that we can work on, the administration can work on with other countries. I think they've already shown that they could go in with Japan and have an agreement with them that's going to help on the side of bringing more beef maybe into that country. So we look at it, we're optimistic that it's going to help in the long run. But again, we're still wondering where that dollars are going to come from at this point because we haven't seen the markets change that much.
Well, Dave, as somebody who's been in this business for a long time, the dairy business, how has your own company or you and your partners changed in terms of international exports?
We really haven't changed much at
haven't
all because
you?
Our processor that we sell our milk to deals mostly with the national framework. So they're not using any export markets, although they have been increasing on the amount of whey that they produced. And that's one of the things that we've seen that will be a positive on the China side because they need to pick up their hog herd, which was about 25% of the world population was there. So as they bring those piglets in and bring that back into play, it's going to be a major source of whey protein that they want to bring into the country so they can help stabilize that. U.S. Dairy Export Council, which the Wisconsin Farm Bureau is a member of, has worked with China to make sure those avenues are still open yet, even though we're facing a little bit of a tariff and stuff like that.
Well, you just mentioned hogs. Hogs were number 7 of Wisconsin's ag products in 2018, valued at $127 million. Mm-hmm. So there's some potential upside in that?
Maybe a little bit, but I think there's other states that will probably benefit a little bit more. Okay. But as I said, the whey processing that we do, and we can use that because we have a cheese processing industry that has whey as a product that they need to move on the open market.
Any thoughts from your other panelists on the ag side?
Well, first of all, I do believe the president and the administration are trying to, they're very sensitive to the political repercussions in the ag community. So when you see payments being made and you see steps now to alleviate.
$430 million in payments to Wisconsin farmers, I think, over a 3-year period.
Right.
But I've been told farmers like you would rather deal in the free market than get a handout from the government.
We would. I think that may include some of the risk management tools that are available through the government.
Yes, thank
but,
you.
But also, we would much rather see some open and free trade become more viable.
Secondly, we'd talked about other factors impacting the pricing system. The consumption of milk has been declining for some period of time, and that's a whole separate issue in some respects to us, is overall, including American consumption. Mm-hmm. So that affects our prices as well.
Professor, any thoughts on the ag side?
Well, Wisconsin ag exporters, like exporters in the rest of the country, will benefit somewhat from China's commitment to increase the quantity of imports from the U.S. The extent of that is not so clear. But the broader context there, of course, is that at the same time as they're getting some amount of benefit from that, they're also getting their bottom line chiseled away by the effects of tariffs. So in January, the president imposed new tariffs on steel and aluminum products on top of the existing tariffs. All of that comes through the supply chain in the form of more costly farm equipment, for example, parts and components for machinery, all of that sort of stuff. So at the same time as you're giving them a bit of a boost at the top end, you're undercutting the bottom end.
Well, that's right, and that's beyond the business. If you look at even the Wisconsin consumer alone, the tariffs have cost about $900
million.
So you think of it, as I expressed in another forum, if that were to be a tax increase, people would be screaming bloody murder.
They would be noticing
that. But the fact is, it is a tax increase.
Yeah.
It has the same effect on the economy, the same effect on people. It's just kind of a pass-through. But tariffs are, it's not that we're putting a tax on the Chinese. It's the American consumer that is paying this tax.
Okay, now let's look at the final graphic, which I think is, I just find it fascinating. Top export items in 2019. The first one was industrial machinery, and jump in here as we go through these top five. Industrial machinery, electrical machinery, medical science equipment, vehicles, and plastics. What vehicles do we export internationally? Professor, your thoughts?
Well, most of Wisconsin's exports are parts and components of vehicles,
okay.
I think, rather than vehicles themselves. Machinery, small engines.
Batteries.
Exactly. That kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I think a couple of things to think about here. One is, first of all of these industries that you've named are very tightly integrated into a global supply chain, which is threatened by tariffs, as it is by coronavirus.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so the costs for those companies will be rising as they are unable to source the cheapest inputs for their production. That's number one. Second is, where do they sell the stuff to? Well, China is only our third biggest export market overall, but it is, of course, by far the fastest growing export market. China, and let's say Greater China, that is East and Southeast Asia, about 40% of the world economy, much faster growing than the rest of the world economy. So when you weight the size of the market by the rate at which it's growing, you can see that all of this is going to have a pretty significant long-term effect on the profitability of producers in Wisconsin.
Now, you're still working in international trade in some of these areas. Scott, do you want to talk about which areas you're working in?
Well, I've been working in both the Asian market and the European market heavily. We're discussing the agreements with Canada, Mexico, and China because those are the ones getting all the attention. I'm also keeping my eye right now on what's happening with Europe.
Yeah.
Discussions of reopening and whether we start to apply tariffs to the European market as well.
Mm-hmm.
all of this has large implications, and it looks like we're getting away from multinational agreements to individual agreements, bilateral. Looks like we're getting away from international forums of deciding who's winning and losing. So, in effect, we're changing the whole rule system of what has occurred. And again, as we said at the start of the program, the business community and the public is set up on a certain system. And when it's stirred up, when people don't know what the rules are, it has a negative effect.
Okay, I want to go back to this last graphic. Help me understand, what type of industrial machinery do we export to the world? What type? Are we talking Caterpillars, mining products, things like that? Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, you look over in southeastern Wisconsin, you've got Gale manufacturing, there's agricultural equipment that's associated with it. We still have the tool and die industry in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks.
A number of those, outboard motors, Mercury Marine up in Fond du Lac,
Briggs
Johnson,
and Stratton,
Briggs and Stratton, a lot in the small motor. Wisconsin's very big in small motor. So you got Kohler, Briggs and Stratton,
Harley Davidson,
a number of them.
Thank you.
So that's just touching off the top of
my head. Electrical machinery is the second biggest category. Major companies come to mind on that. Electrical?
Yeah, Rockwell Manufacturing in Milwaukee.
Thank you.
Johnson Controls.
Johnson Controls. Milwaukee Tool, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Although they might come. Okay. Then medical and science?
Oh, GE is big. Yeah. I mean, their world headquarters is out of Waukesha. Yeah. So that's one of the big players.
And then plastics?
Oh, we've got a number of plastics industry has been pretty big in Wisconsin. Sheboygan, you've got several companies in that area. Trying to think. Oh, Madison has some plastic manufacturing as well. Baraboo, we've got some smaller manufacturing.
Portage,
got a number of smaller
plastics. Yeah, there's quite
number
a
is, number of smaller. Mm-hmm. They may not be the 1,000 employees for them, but we've got a number of small plastic manufacturers.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left. Let me ask you this. If a business person is watching this show and they want to learn more about the new rules in light of our new deals with Mexico, Canada, and China, where would she or he go for information?
The internet has all kinds of information.
The
groups.
Bad and good.
Yeah,
reliable and...
Yeah, the things I follow, well, USTA, U.S. Trade Representative Office, has materials on it. If you want an independent group, the Peterson Institute
does
a number of papers, which I find.
The Peterson Institute?
That's kind of one of my go-tos. Brookings tends to be a little bit more biased against what is occurring, but they also have good in-depth reports, Brookings Institute.
Peterson Institute provides, I think, very balanced, data-driven analysis,
yes.
And it's a really good place to go to learn stuff.
Is the ag community doing anything differently to learn about these new rules with China, Mexico, and Canada?
I think Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a little segment within the organization there that works with export markets. They work with, I brought up U.S. Dairy Export Council out of Washington, D.C., so I think you can look to them for some information, and they've done some trade missions back and forth with Central America, Mexico, and that kind of thing. So I think it's beneficial to reach out to them also.
Well, maybe final question for each of you. Are we seeing some clarity in the new emerging international trade situation, or is there still a lot of question marks out there? Ian?
Under the new Phase One agreement with China, the arbiter of whether the agreement is being followed or not is not the WTO,
right,
but the U.S. Trade Representative's office, which is a political office.
Yes.
It's not unbiased, and it's not a neutral party. So I think we have, as I said at the beginning, we're going into an era of great instability and uncertainty because we no longer know that policy will be driven by the interests of the country as a whole. It may be fall victim to the electoral cycle.
Very important statement. Scott, your thought?
Well, I think the jury is still out on where it may go. At least I'm hopeful it may be. Yes, it is being disrupted severely at this point. As I've shared in a number of other forums as well, is I think it to the advantage of this administration to be able to have agreements and to have free trade because we all come out ahead. And we can't think of these things in terms of a zero sum where one person wins and the other loses. It's the entire community is raised up when you've got international trade going on. So where it is going, I think there's enough pressure, there's enough business community support, enough ag community support, that we understand that, that trade in a fair and balanced trade is to the advantage of the United States and our citizens.
And then finally, Dave, do you see some clarity emerging with ag products?
It could be a little bit of clarity. We know that we need to get those two steps back, as our other gentleman talked about. Hopefully that can come sooner than later. But when you look at a global marketplace, there's all sorts of things that happen around the globe that can affect that. So hopefully we can get some clarity down the road here as we go.
Such a complex subject. Thank you very much. I want to thank Dave Daniels, a Kenosha County dairy farmer, who's a vice president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, former Governor Scott McCollum, and Ian Coxhead, an applied economics professor at UW-Madison. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Steve.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.